Today I'm joined by the one and only Helen Hosandi, a lead developer of WordPress, director of open source initiatives at 10up, and quite frankly, the reason this podcast even exists. I've been wanting to get Helen on the podcast since its inception, and I'm glad that I was finally able to chat with her. As I expected, I had a great conversation with Helen, as we dived into some difficult topics, from diversity in open source spaces to how we define merit in our tech communities. I hope you'll enjoy my chat with Helen. Right, good morning, Helen. How are you doing today?
I am not too bad. How are you doing?
Excellent. I'm given the current circumstances around the world, I'm good, thank you. This is not a podcast about that, but we have to acknowledge the fact that this is being recorded during quite an interesting time in the life of our planet.
Yes.
I am on afternoon time. You are, I think, 8 in the morning or something like that?
It's a little after 8, yeah.
Okay, excellent. I don't know about you, but I am not a morning person, so I apologize for getting you up and recording so early.
It's fine.
Great. So the first thing I want to just kind of start with is the intro questions I usually ask all my guests. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself. For those of you who don't know who Helen is, so who are you, what do you do, and how are you involved with WordPress?
Yeah, okay. So my name is Helen. I am the director of open source initiatives at a fully distributed agency called 10up, where we do focus a lot on WordPress implementations, although we actually do a wide variety of work and it's not all, you know, development and design, right? There's also content and strategy and advertising and revenue and those sort of things, which is really cool to have all those different disciplines in my coworkers. And then as a part of that, as a director of open source initiatives, I do a lot of work on WordPress itself. So sometimes I'm working on plugins and also sometimes I'm working on WordPress core, where I am one of the lead developers, whatever that title means right now. You know, things change over the years, and I am currently just starting off as the technical lead for the 5.6 release specifically.
Excellent. And seeing as it is, you know, early morning your time, I'm sure like most people, you have an early morning drink that gets you going for the day. Are you a coffee drinker, tea drinker, something else?
Believe it or not, I really just drink water. Okay. I will occasionally have a coffee or caffeine in the morning, but I'm very sensitive to caffeine and it will keep me awake for over 12 hours. If I have caffeine. Yeah. So I could have it now and probably be okay, but anytime after now, I'm going to have a hard time at night. So I actually do go to bed fairly early most of the time. And I get up pretty early because I have kids, so I don't really have a choice.
Yes, I know that feeling. I am not a morning person. I am very much a night owl, but ever since my wife and I have had boys, that's just gone way by the wayside. Excellent. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, I've been following Helen since practically about the time that I got involved with WordPress. And I remember you tweeting a while back about the fact that you were actually tracking your sleep patterns. And you noticed that if you have coffee after a certain time, it directly affects your sleep patterns. And based on that tweet, I tried it out for a week. I tried not having coffee after lunch. And I was amazed at how much better I slept. So you've already affected my sleep patterns. Never mind, you know, my WordPress stuff.
that's actually really good to hear. I'm a big fan of keeping track of, you know, how different things are affecting your body. You know, like your consumption and what you're thinking about, you know, and screens and all of that. So that's really cool to hear.
Excellent, cool. So. You kind of dived into a whole bunch of things that I really would like to get into you with. And I'll be honest, I could probably talk about those things for an hour and then talk about other stuff for an hour as well. So I'll try not to dive into that too much. But your title I find quite interesting, Director of Open Source Initiatives. That almost to me sounds like it's not just WordPress. You could be working on any kind of open source things. And it's not just specifically core. You could be doing whatever you wanted. Are you able to choose your own path there, or is it something specific that the company asks you to have a look into or work with?
The short answer to that, before I get into details, is yes, I decide what I'm working on. So I've been at 10up since 2011. I just passed my 9-year work anniversary a couple
Congrats.
Weeks ago. Thank you. And it has been a wild ride, you know. So I was actually the first employee 9 years ago, the first full-time employee. And we have grown to, I don't want to type on my keyboard and to, you know, make a bunch of noise and find out, but I think we have over 200 people or are hovering around that point. And so that kind of growth has been, you know, a lot to deal with. You know, lots of companies grow even bigger. But, you know, to me, that's not, you know, what I had in mind, not in a negative way, but just, it had just never occurred to me that I would go sign up to work at this company and it would become this big thing. And we would have this ability to, you know, grow different paths for people. Right. And so for me, you know, I started out as, you know, what we call a web engineer. So doing any sort of, you know, engineering development work on sites, both front end and back end. And I started there and very quickly got involved in core, pretty much right around the time that I started at TenUp. And, you know, we, Jake Goldman, who is the founder of TenUp, he and I very much agree on the philosophies of open source and supporting it, right? And as a company that builds, you know, on WordPress, but also on the web, which is largely powered by open technologies, it is really our duty as, you know, good citizens of the web, right? And of people who derive our business from that to participate in it, to support it, to be a part of its growth, to be a part of its sustainability. And so, you know, we agreed on that very early on, right? We disagree about some things sometimes because I disagree with everybody about some things sometimes. I think that's just sort of, you know, who I am. And I like to think that I'm not rude about it, but, for the most part, but you know, for all of that, like our base, philosophies and our goals and, you know, our values and what drives us, very much align. And so that's what's kept me there for so long. And so over the years we have, you know, worked on ways to increase my involvement specifically, right? So my time, you know, how do we justify that from a business perspective? How do we measure that? If we measure it from a business perspective, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It can be tricky. And then on top of that, you know, how do we grow our own team, right? So having an open source practice at TenUp, how do we grow that? How do we sustain that? And yeah, so my job as the director specifically is to determine, you know, along with Jake and along with Jeff Paul, who is our manager for the team, who helps me a lot with tasks that I am not nearly as good at. And also something that Jeff, I feel like is maybe overly humble about, is actually, he does actually have a computer science background. So he does have a technical perspective, right? Whether he's actually trying to write the code or not, is not relevant. But he does have a technical perspective as well. So it's us working together with me driving it to determine, you know, what are our priorities as a company, right? What helps us, while also balancing that with what is correct for the broader community, what is correct in open source, right? Making sure that our motivations are good, that we're not trying to overly commercialize something, or that we're not only interested in making a change for selfish reasons, right? That we're thinking about how does this impact everybody at large? What is the forward compatibility of this thing, right? That's something I think about a lot as well. It's like we worry about backwards compatibility, which I still believe is correct. But I think a part of worrying about backwards compatibility is that as you build new things, you also have to consider forwards compatibility, right? You can't just build and be like, okay, well, whatever happens later happens, right? You do have to at least try to anticipate what you can. So thinking about that. And so, of course, you know, we are known a lot in the WordPress space and a lot for our WordPress-specific contributions, which have also included plugins. As I mentioned, I have spent a lot of my time over the last few years really focusing on maintenance of our existing plugins, some of which are used really widely and are just as terrifying to update as it is to commit something to core. And we also have some more, we call like enterprise-y offerings. So you have plugins like Distributor, which works on like how do you syndicate content between sites, which is actually a very complicated topic, and there's a lot of work to be done there. And then we also have this really cool plugin that's a lot newer called Classify, which has this like clever spelling, putting AI at the end. But essentially what it does is it gives you a way to hook your WordPress up to various AI cloud services. Mm. So the common ones there are like Azure and IBM's, what is it called, Watson. And we're adding services over time so that you can classify your content. So that can be stuff like automatic tags for articles, right? So for like a news site, this is very useful because there are different types of tags. And so you could have it like automatically tag famous people and places, right? In your content, which is pretty cool. And then the part that I really like is that it can automatically generate like alternative text and tags for images, which I actually run this on my own site. So it automatically generates alt tags for images, which is really nice because a lot of mine come over from Instagram. So like I federate from Instagram back into my WordPress so that I, retain it on my own site and on my own terms. And so using that plugin, I don't have to worry about going in later after it's already ingested it from Instagram and like add alt text, right, for assistive technology. But rather it automatically does it itself. And most of the time it's pretty good. I don't want to sound like I'm plugging it. These are just cool things that I'm working on. We don't make any money from these things. They are still free plugins. Those are just cool things that we work on. And then, on top of that, as I said, the web is broad, right? And a lot of it is open technology. So, I think that, my expertise specifically does tend to mean that we don't always wander in those directions. But when opportunities do come up where we've done things, now it's been quite a while, but we've done work with the jQuery Foundation, working on their sites, right? That's a method of contributing. It's not that you have to contribute code to the core project. It's just anything that helps that project move forward, right? Mm. So like we've talked about this a lot in the WordPress space, right? So documentation is helpful. Events are helpful when we had in-person events, I guess. Not so much currently, although they're working on alternative things, which is really cool and something to get involved in. So it's the same thing across the web, right? There are lots of things that you could do to help keep moving the web forward that don't necessarily have to be about code. They don't necessarily have to be about, I want to drive a new feature, right? Just anywhere that you can jump in and help something out. So a big part of that is also monitoring for those opportunities and then balancing that against, things that we do already want to accomplish as a team, right? Because we're a team and we don't just hang around doing nothing. So we have things we already want to be working on, but, we have to keep an eye out for what are these new exciting things that we could be working on, and how do we fit that into our schedule and our lives? And as a company, what do we want to do with that? Do we want to promote it? Do we want to, what do we want to do with this? And how do we create again, the story and for companies, right? The narrative about what you're working on. And all of those things are important, right? I think that I'm definitely just like talking. But one of the things that's been really fascinating for me in the WordPress space, and actually bears a lot of similarities to where I've come from before, which we can talk about separately, which is music, is there's sort of like, I don't know, this mindset of like purity almost, where people don't like to bring things like marketing tactics into what they're working on. And there's a lot of looking down on people who do more traditional marketing type of stuff, where you care about your narrative, where you craft your story, where you work on case studies, where you have marketing, where you have these things, right? Slogans, design treatment, all of that. And I think there's a lot of this attitude of like, and this is sort of endemic to open web stuff generally, is there's this sort of like looking down on that as like being corny or, it's wasteful or it's vain or it's whatever.
Not as important.
It's like, Yeah, exactly. These are very important things. I mean, and especially when you're running a business, you want to be able to support these things, right? And so you have to put the work into how do you, in wanting to sustain the open web, how do you also then sustain your company so that you can continue doing that work, right? And you do have to do those things, and it's not something to look down on, right? Coding all day, all the time is not going to do anything unless there are people there to who want to use it, right? And who are excited to use it and that you're actually solving their problems.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is an area that I want to dive into with you in a second, maybe not a second, in a few minutes. but before we go down that path, you mentioned about, you know, where you've come from. You mentioned about being a classically trained pianist, I think is the right term. So I want to kind of go down that path. So how does Helen go from classically trained pianist to director of open source initiatives?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that story. So feel free to go ahead.
Sure. So to start, my background academically post high school is in music. I have my undergrad degree in piano performance, and then I have a master's degree in specifically collaborative piano and chamber music is the full program title. But essentially, you know, playing well with others is what we call it. After I finished, well, let me see. I think maybe I'll go backward. So from the beginning, we did not get a computer when I was super young, but I think it's more about the time period in which you got it. So this was the mid-ish 90s. And we got a home computer, but my dad had a computer. He's a math professor. And so he had a computer in his office before that. So we were exposed to these things fairly early on. And my dad, being a math professor, he's not a programmer, you know, like at all, but he knows some basics, right? So in the math world, like you typically have to know like Fortran kind of stuff, MATLAB, those sort of things to do your research projects. You know, amongst other things. I think I dabbled in Fortran at one point in high school and was, you know, had no idea what I was doing, so bad at it. But I did have that exposure growing up. And one of the things that I tell sometimes is that one of my earliest memories of programming was my dad, who also plays violin, for fun. He picked it up way later in life than you typically think of like people learning music. I think he was like 19, because my dad grew up, my parents are Chinese, and they grew up around Shanghai, in that area, that region of China. And so this was during the Cultural Revolution, where Western music was not allowed. And so my father was very much passionate about music, and his father is too. And so they had illicit materials in the form of vinyl, you know, LPs with Beethoven on them. That was their, you know, illegal material. And when those things started to ease off, my dad started learning violin on his own because it was something he was passionate about. And so growing up, he was very much involved in my piano lessons, very much involved in making sure I was doing things right. And so he was teaching me about Hertz values, right? So the Western scale as we know it, and what are the Hertz values that correspond to the notes on the piano, right? So like the notes that we've decided on, these are, you know, essentially arbitrary. They're just labels on Hertz values, right? And so that's what he was teaching me. And so he taught me how to use BASIC to write little melodies. So you could have it output specific Hertz values for a specific length of time and get it to play little melodies. Because this was, these were the days of, you know, the little piezo speaker inside the tower, right? So it wasn't like, you know, full blown music, you know, harmonies even. It was just, you know, playing a little melody on the system speaker. So that was one of my earliest experiences, and it was very much mixing everything that we were doing, and it was very much mostly a music and math lesson. It wasn't necessarily about programming, but that those basic concepts, right? And so I was very fortunate. We stuck to an area with a very good public school system. That was very important to my father. I grew up with just my dad and my sister for the most part. So my father just kept, stayed in jobs in that region so that we could stay there in that school system. And it was a very nice one. This was in Virginia Beach. And so we had lots of opportunities that we may not have had we had to move elsewhere. And so I was able to pick up some programming classes through, okay. I think, the eighth grade. I tested out of a computing class, which was, I think, going to be focused mostly on typing skills. And that is a thing that I picked up very early is typing. We can talk about that too, which is that I entered the Ultimate Typing Championship recently, which was an interesting experience. But
we definitely have to talk about that.
But I, was already typing fairly quickly, even as a 13-year-old, toward the, I think I was going to say 80 words per minute or something, which is already, that's a normal typing speed for an adult on the fat side. So I was typing like that in middle school. And so they were like, well, you don't need to be in computing class. What are we going to do with you? And they set up an independent study with a few other kids who for whatever reason, were not in some other elective. And we were entered into this thing called ThinkQuest, which was a website building competition for grade school, grade schoolers. And so, we learned how to make websites. I think at the time the hot thing was Flash, and I could not figure it out. It made no sense to me, and it annoyed me even then. So I very much just learned tables and that sort of thing. Yeah, tables and PaintShop Pro to make myself some very cheesy animated headers and banners and that sort of stuff.
Now I'm understanding your updated GitHub profile page.
Oh yeah. I am of the GeoCities extended AIM profiles generation. Nice. So I love all that stuff, and I love all those throwbacks. So that's really where it really started, I would say, was having that opportunity, which is all just chance, right? My father deciding that, our priority was to stay in a place where we would have those educational opportunities, which was, very a huge choice on his behalf, right, to choose our location over his choice in jobs. And then just this chance where somebody gave you the opportunity to do this, right? Or some poor teacher had to cut their planning hours short and teach this extra independent study. And then in high school, we did have computer science class in the U.S. That's AP Computer Science. I don't know how much of that system leaked outside of the U.S., but I did computer science in high school, which was C++ in high school. And then in college, I actually started as a double major in computer science and music. Uh-huh. And hated the computer science major. And this is really where we get into the gendered stuff. Where in high school, this was also very apparent. So I was the only girl. We were teenagers. Mm-hmm. I was the only girl in my class of, 20, 25 people.
And just quickly, roughly what year was that?
This would have been 2001.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I have to pin it against my memories of what else I was taking that year. 2001? Oh, it might have been 2000. I want to say 2000. So my 10th grade, my sophomore year of high school. I think that's correct, because I think that I took computer science and calculus in the same year. And that's when it would have been. This makes me sound a lot more accomplished than I really am. But just so that people are listening know, I was a very bad high school student and got very bad grades. So despite the elevated level of the class itself that I was taking. I actually did not do any of the work. So, you know, it's all for whatever. I was in this computer science class and the teacher was a woman even, but still very much treated me as though I didn't belong. That was, you know, the class at large was not like that. A lot of people in that class were friends and some of them are still my friends today. I don't keep that many friends from home, but, these were people that I was very close with. But you did get that sense of like, are you lost? Are you sure you know what you're doing? And it was like, listen, the boys in the class are cheating off of me. So you could, you know, relax not, you know, keep asking me if I'm sure I know what I'm doing, you know? Right. So I got an early taste of that. I mean, this is true all throughout all of life, right? Is that you get that questioning of like, are you sure? Right. Are you sure you know what you're doing? Are you sure this is right? Even as a small child, I was very outspoken about things that I didn't like, about things that I perceived as racist, which, yes, children notice these things. I was very outspoken about those things. I used to get into fights all the time. And so there was always this perpetual surprise from adults around me of, you know, you're not what we expect you to be. And it's like, I don't know where you came up with these expectations, right? Like, we want kids to not fight, but these kids are calling me, you know, racist slurs. Like, what are you expecting? Of course I'm going to hit them, you know? That was my logic as a kid. It's obviously, right, like, not great logic, but kid logic made a lot of sense to me. Totally. So that's kind of where I came from. And then in college, it was very male-dominated. And I just... between the work itself, which, you know, we're talking about like compiled programs, you know, operating system level stuff, you know, just even just looking at the trajectory of what you're expected to work on, I was like, this is not very exciting to me. This is not something that I can see myself being excited about, something that I would want to do work in, right? There are other areas of computers that are still very interesting to me, but I just don't see this as something that I want to be doing every day, all day. The work, trying to be a double major, you know, it just seemed like too much to me. So I dropped it after a semester. So I have one semester of Java and math logic, I think were the things that I had at the time. And then just focused on music. And I ended up finishing college a year early. Again, this makes me sound like a way better student than I actually was. But I did finish college a year early for various reasons. And left and did my master's. And so when I finished my master's, I was only 22 and did not have the resources to go on to do a doctorate. It's very expensive in the music world to apply to programs because you have those application fees, which are already quite high. I think they apply to all programs, right? College applications in the US cost money. So I didn't even have the money to like do applications. And then in the music world, on top of that, you have to audition. So that typically means traveling there, having the bandwidth to prepare a whole separate program that you then perform there for your audition. And so for me, as somebody who had to work all through school, this was just impossible for me. It was an impossible load on top of what I already had going on. And then who was going to pay for it when I got there? You know, I don't know. I was just not willing to take that chance. So my husband, my now husband, came to that same school to do his doctorate. We knew each other from college and then had split ways, but then he came there to do his doctorate. And so I was like, I guess I'll stay and see how this works out. But I, at this point, needed healthcare. Because the U.S. is a ridiculous place. And so I needed healthcare. I wanted a steady paycheck. Having grown up somewhat less economically secure. So I really wanted that security back in my life, right? Of having a regular paycheck and not having $6 in my bank account. And so I was like, okay, what do I do to find, you know, a paycheck to job with benefits. And so the music school where we were, they were hiring a mid-level web developer. And because one of my jobs while I was in school was working in the media lab. Mm-hmm. I had met a lot of those people and they had taught me some stuff about how the website worked for the school. So teaching me some basics about PHP and MySQL. And these were things that actually, they pick up pretty easily when you've had C++ and Java. They're not, they don't look the same, but the, you know, they're very similar, honestly. So for loops are C style for loops in PHP, for instance, right? So, so a lot of those concepts, they map over very easily. And so I picked it up fairly quickly, again, because I'd had that earlier background, even if it wasn't like a degree, you know, I'd been fortunate to have those classes. And so they were hiring and I interviewed for the job and, you know, my skill level was probably somewhat lower, right, naturally, than like in terms of technical ability than some of the other people who had interviewed. But because I knew everybody at the school, because I had been a collaborative pianist, which meant that I was interacting with not just my professors, but the professors of every musical partner that I had. And I also participated in the grad student association, which meant that I knew a lot of the administration and how it worked. And so their perspective on that, that group. So at that school, actually the web development team was within IT instead of communications, which is traditionally how it's done at universities. So for whatever reason, it was within the IT team. And so their perspective was that my knowledge of the school's needs, the various personalities, administration, all of that was something that far outweighed any technical stuff that I maybe needed to learn, right? So the technical stuff I could pick up very easily on the job. The personal stuff was much harder to pick up on the job. And so they felt that that was an advantage that I would bring to the job. So again, people giving me a chance. And I worked there for a few years. And then when my husband finished his coursework, that was when we started moving around a bunch. And I thought to myself, okay, this is that's the life, right? He was set up for a life of performing in academia. And that in the music world, you know, and as I learned from my dad being in academia, to chase tenured jobs means moving all the time. Until you find a place where tenure track sticks for you, right? And so I was prepared to be moving all the time, which we have moved quite a bit. And so in preparation for that, I was like, okay, so I've heard at this point, I had gone to like one WordCamp and I was like, okay, I've heard that there's a thing known as remote working, where like you can work from home and like, and it's not just you dial into meetings all day. It's that you like actually work online and everybody else is working online with you. And that sounds really cool. I don't like this idea of like telecommuting, right? Again, I think in that time too, and this is like the late 2000s, so like 2008. No, so when I switched, it was 2010, 2011, but you know, even at that time, we think of telecommuting. We're thinking of like, oh, they're going to make me dial in all day and, you know, sit on the phone or sit on video. And it's like, oh, no. But this idea of like remote working, hey, that's really cool. That I didn't know that was a thing that existed, right? Because musicians, sort of by definition, are like co-located. So here we go. Let's see what's out there, right? So I went to WordCamp Boston in 2011. So it was like my second WordCamp. Honestly, it was partially an excuse to visit my sister who lives in Boston. But I went to WordCamp Boston and ended up meeting a bunch of people. And I started using Twitter. So RIP to my my reputation. But started using Twitter. And after WordCamp Boston, saw, I think, a retweet from Brad Williams of Jake, who I had not met. And saw a retweet that was like, hey, you know, I'm looking for somebody full-time with benefits, right? Again, like, this is what I'm fixated on, is that stability, right? It's like, I'm very glad that I found an area where I also happen to like the job, right? Or love the job, whatever it is. But truthfully, what motivated me was that stability, that ability to, like, you know, live the life that I was hoping to be able to have and the life that my parents immigrated to give me, right? So in prioritizing that, I saw this posting and was like, hey, that sounds interesting. Let me email this or like, you know, I don't know, tweet at, DM. I don't even know what it was at the time. Say something to this Jake person, see what they're looking for. And, you know, we clicked and I went to 10 up and
wow. You
know, years have grown it into this. But yeah, that's really what it is.
So not only were you the first employee, but 10 up was your first WordPress and remote working company.
Yes. Yeah. I just dove right in. I had no idea, like, because it was so new at the time. And, you know, you think about the difference between now and 2011, right? So at the time, it was just like between my ignorance of what any of this meant and this being, you know, relatively new to the scene, was that like a full-time benefited WordPress job was not common at the time, right? You might have to go to like a big publisher to have that sort of job. So this is relatively new to the agency space as well. So I think I was just like, I don't know what this means, but I will figure it out.
Right. Wow. Well, I think you figured it out pretty well.
Some of it's you make it work for you too, right? It's like, you know, I have a strong personality. And so some of it is very much like, hey, there's this thing that I'm doing now. What do I like about it? What do I not like about it? And how do I change that to meet what works for me? But knowing that what works for me means that I need to make sure that whatever I'm working on is good for everybody, right? Like, I'm not driven to only benefit myself. That would not make me feel good, right? So knowing that, generally speaking, my motivations are good, how do I then shape what's around me into something that works well for me? Because I think that that will benefit more than just myself. Right. So it's just force of personality stuff. And that shows in WordPress as well, I think. So.
Oh, great. So, okay. So that's really interesting. And I feel like I'm going to need to have another interview with you and go dive into some of the other things there, but I want to try and keep
this really long. I don't know. There are no rules to that podcast.
So you are director of open source initiatives at 10up. You are also a lead developer of WordPress. Talk to me about how that came about. like, I don't even know what the difference is between somebody who contributes and somebody who has commit and somebody who's a lead developer. Is there a special room that you go to and they, you know, send you a picture or something? How does that all work?
So this has changed a lot over the years. I think today being a lead developer for Core is less meaningful than it has been in the past. Some of it due to purposeful moves to, you know, sort of flatten that a little bit. And some of that due to just the sheer growth of the Core project, right? There are so many aspects to the WordPress project, but even just in Core itself, it has grown tremendously. And so the meaningfulness of like this one small group of people with a specific title, I think has diminished a lot over the last several years. And that's fine. It does not make me feel like I'm worse or less off just because the meaning of it has changed. That's, you know, the reality of the world. But I think the theme of this podcast, I guess, is going to be about giving people chances, right? And I would like to talk about that a little more later, but
absolutely.
It was the same thing, you know, just met some people at a WordCamp, right? So WordCamps are a big opportunity. And so I met some people at a WordCamp and they felt that we had a connection. So this would be people like Andy Neeson, Sarah Cannon, Chelsea Otakin, you know, people, some of them are not around as so much anymore, but these are people that I had met and connected with, and so they just asked me, hey, you know, would you be interested in working on this thing, right? And I was like, I don't know what it means. Again, I don't know what any of this means, but because I don't know what it means, right? I may not like it. Who knows, right? But I'm not comfortable with not knowing what it means. So I want to find out. Let's go find out. You know, so it was just a lot of people just giving me a chance to try stuff out, make mistakes without huge penalty, right? and that sort of thing. And so just over the years, I think it's definitely, you know, between kind of giving me the time to work on it where I would not have had time to do it on my own, because I actually still did music stuff sometimes on the side. And so between Tenup giving me the work time to do these things and the community giving me more and more trust in the way that I was communicating and the decisions I was making, so those things kind of came together, I think, definitely compounded. And so over time, that very much led to me being in a position where people were looking to me for decisions, where it wasn't just I happened to be there in that moment and made a decision, which is a lot of how open source is driven. It's just who's there in that moment. But it became a thing where people were looking to me to make decisions, where people trusted me, where I was being trusted with interpersonal issues, that sort of thing, where, you know, I have proven myself right time and time again. You know, again, I was fortunate to have company backing. This is much harder to accomplish on your own time, in my opinion. But, you know, I gained that trust of people broadly, right? There's still plenty of people who may not feel the same way. That's okay. Again, not going to get along with everybody. That's just, I have accepted that as a function of who I am. I think it's a signal of trust. A signal of decision making. And so at the time that I became a lead developer, which was a little over 5 years ago, what it meant was that you had an understanding of the broad history of the project that you could be consulted on to make decisions that maybe were controversial or maybe needed that knowledge of what's happened in the past, right? Where it's like, hey, just so you remember, maybe we need to be careful about this thing because in the past it, you know, it didn't work well or it went badly from a community perspective or something, right? Just something in the history of the project needed to inform something that we were doing moving forward. And so I think that's really where the lead developer stuff comes into play, is sort of this, like, we tend to have deep knowledge of one area. You know, each of us who still has that title, we have different areas that we're better at, which is the right thing. I don't think it's reasonable to think that any one person is good at all of WordPress. So, you know, we each have a different strength, right? But broadly speaking, we're people who are able to consider history and architecture all at the same time and put those things together. And as I mentioned, when you want back compat, you also have to have forward compatibility. And so those are things that you have to know in order to make those decisions in a good way.
I find it very interesting that you mentioned that, because when I used WordPress as a tool way longer than what I've actually been involved with WordPress from contribution point of view, community point of view, using it as a development tool. And one of the, I don't know if it was a timing situation, but when I sort of joined the WordPress community, that was the year that Matt spoke about the Milestones book at WordCamp US that year. And so I went and read all of that history. And I'm of the opinion that a lot of people could benefit from reading that book and listening to all of those interviews, going back to people like you said, Andrew Nason, I think yourself, Ryan Boren, and just kind of listening to all the history of the project, because it helps you, you know, understand what's come before and how you've dealt with problems. So I find that very interesting that you mentioned that. Then we get on to what for me is your biggest achievement in the WordPress space, the 4.7 release. That was the first time I personally had signed up for the live stream of WordCamp US, and 4.7 was released and you were on stage speaking about it. And that was kind of when I started really following you as a person, because I was like, hey, who's this amazing person who's just, you know, let her release and let me find out about who she is and follow you on Twitter. And oh, wow, she's got some interesting things that she talks about and she speaks her mind. She makes awesome egg bread. So let's talk about that. How did, correct me if I'm wrong, but you weren't initially meant to lead that release. Matt was.
Correct.
And how did that all come about?
Yeah. So I had previously led the 4.0 release, which, you know, in WordPress, like each of these hundreds, tens. Oh my God. my math professor father is ashamed of me, right? Each of those tenth decimals, each of those releases is of the same importance, right? But we do, as humans, we have this like round number bias, right? So we, that's like a real thing that you can look up. So for the 4.0 release, you know, even though it does not actually have more significance from the development and release standpoint, you know, we recognize it as something meaningful to people. And so we, I led the release, some of it as a, you know, statement of, you know, there are people like me in this project, whatever like it means, there are many things that means. And then also, you know, some of the interesting things that we brought into that release, which I think were on a smaller scale, but some of my favorite things in WordPress actually came in during that release, which include things like the magical embed expansion, like when you post in, like you paste in a YouTube URL and it just like magically turns into a video or a tweet. Please, God, don't embed my tweets. But just, I don't know. I just tweet terrible things. But the magical embeds, and then this the pinning that we had in the sidebar. I don't know what exactly Gutenberg does. I can't picture it in my head. But in the classic editor, when you're scrolling, the sidebar kind of pins itself based on like the direction you're scrolling and how long the page is. And that's that was actually very tricky. That's something that we worked on at that release. So these were just like tiny things, you know, but they just made such a huge difference in the way that you use something daily, right? You make a small change, but when it's used a lot, that change, the effects of that change are compounded, right? So you can have a huge impact by making small changes. So yeah, so that was 4.0. And then for 4.7, Matt had some things going on in his life. And so he needed to take a step back and let somebody else lead. And we felt that, I don't remember how I was nominated into that, but I was asked if I would be willing to do it. And at the time, they asked and I said, you know, this is probably my last realistic opportunity to really lead a release just because I knew what I wanted in terms of my family life. So I was like, you know, might as well. And thanks for trusting me, you know, with this because, you know, of whatever I did or whatever I accomplished in 4.0, right? So I ended up leading the 4.7 release and it was a lot. People, I think, mostly at this point remember the REST API was like the big merge in 4.7. I probably cannot tell you about half of the features at this point, just because I don't know. I would have to look at the video myself. It was just really a big thing because we had really, you know, done a lot of work in. It's still not a formal process, to be honest, but done a lot of work in, you know, empowering people to make these decisions and. You know, the breadth of things that were being included. So there's a new default theme and REST API and starter content, which was the thing that like I, with the help of Weston Reuter, and, you know, lots of other people obviously are always looking at all these things, but really Weston and I just like sat down and crunched through it over the course of, you know, a week or two. The concept of starter content in WordPress, which, you know, we can talk about someday, but I think has a lot of potential still. And so we have all these things that we're working on and yeah. And so the thing that I kept as a secret, I guess, through it, although part of it is actually also just who I am. So I was actually pregnant through the whole release. And I was actually pretty sick throughout. So thankfully, working remotely is great for this. Nobody knows or knew until now, I guess, that I spent a lot of that release doing stuff lying on my side in bed with my laptop propped up like on its side, you know, just typing that way because I couldn't even sit up. So it was hard, but I kept it to myself for multiple reasons. One is that just personally, this is how I am with those, that sort of information. For as dumb as my tweets are, I do not actually share a lot of that sort of personally identifying stuff, right? The sort of thing that sticks and identifies who you are and what you were doing at a given moment in time. I don't tend to tweet stuff like that. So I just tend not to share those things to begin with. And also, you know, just you have children. So sometimes, you know, you're just worried about risks, right? And you just, you don't want to tell anybody anything too early because something bad could still happen, you know? And so just kind of kept it to myself. And I also, you know, as terrible as it sounds, you know, there, you make controversial decisions as a release lead, right? You're going to have to, because you're going to have to cut something at some point. It is, it never goes perfectly. Something just isn't ready or just doesn't have the focus needed to get it over the line. Right. And you can't demand that of people who are volunteering their time. Right. You can't be like, hey, in order for you to get this thing in, I need you to do 60 hours of work on it over the next week. That's completely unreasonable. The reasonable thing for me to do as a good leader, a conscientious person, is to say, hey, the amount of work required here is not something that I think is reasonable to ask of you. I understand that you would like to have it done now, but I cannot ask that of you. Right. And that amount of time is not a guarantee that it will be done, right? So the correct thing to do is to remove it from this release. And that sucks for everybody. It feels bad, right? So I very much did not want anybody attributing any disagreements, any decisions to me being pregnant. So that's a thing that, you know, not the majority of people, but enough nasty people online like to do with their time. Is to attribute problems to something not actually related. And that was something I very much anticipated. I don't think that I have ever seen anybody say anything since. But yeah, I kept it to myself until the release was out. And then I was like, guess what? I'm see you in like, I don't know, another 5 months plus four of leave. So see you at the end of the year.
Right.
So that's how that went. The release itself, I think, went fairly well. You know, the rest of it's hard. Even today, it's like, did I make the right decision? It's been almost 5 years and it's still like, did I make the right decision? No, almost 4 years. Did I make the right decision? Is it doing good? Is it doing good for the project? I still don't know. We still don't know. Right. And so maybe the answer is no, I don't know. Right. Maybe the fact that we don't have a real answer to that means that the answer is no, and we just don't want to accept that. I don't know. But, you know, the release itself, we made the decisions. They were hard. They didn't all go as they should have, you know, but that's that's reality. That's the reality of any work that you do. And in open source, it's, you know, it's the same thing.
It's sort of 10 times. So
yeah, it just happens in public. Yeah. So
absolutely. Well, I'm glad you kind of dived into that, and I'm going to preface what we're going to chat about next with a bit of a personal sort of statement. I know that whatever we discuss here today, if there's ever any fallout, I'll probably never hear about it because I'm a white male in tech and people won't generally come after me. But I also know that you're a badass and you can handle yourself anyway. But I will also say, and I did say this to Helen before we started chatting, if she doesn't feel comfortable talking about something, we're going to just cut it out of this. I might just cut this out. But let's talk about a little bit more about, you know, these things that you've alluded to while we were chatting earlier. And that's what it's like being a woman, a person of a different nationality than, in big inverted quotes, the norm, you know, in an open source project in the age of trolls and the internet. It can't be easy, a mom, a wife, you know, it can't be easy being such a high profile person and dealing with probably a lot more, you know, BS than I would ever have to deal with.
Yeah. So let me think about how I want to frame this. So the number one thing that I want people to think about first and foremost in this topic is the concept of intersectionality. I'm not a huge fan of terminology. When you hear me talk, and as you've heard me talk throughout this, I'm not a person who throws out, you know, the academic word for things. I'm just not like that. I misspeak. I call tens, hundreds, or whatever, you know, too. But on top of that, I just am not a huge terminology person. Some of that is, I think, having grown up around people who, like, English is not their first language. And so you just, it's not dumbing down. I really hate that as a way of calling it. It's just, you have to pick different words that are going to make sense to that person. It's all contextual. There's also a thing called code switching. So the way that I may be talking here in this podcast is not the same that I would talk to a client of Tenna, and is not the same way that I would talk to my friends from home, right? The slang that we may use, the terminology we may use, these are all different in different contexts. And that's also huge, is context. Context matters. The intersection of different factors matters, right? So one of the biggest things is understanding and recognizing and being comfortable saying, I am a woman in tech, but I am also an East Asian woman in tech, right? And I grew up in the US. I was born in New York, grew up in the US, right? So I am, I also hate the word American, because now, so now I live in Costa Rica, and my husband is Costa Rican. So they are Latin American. So what does American mean? Very much dislike that term, but you know, I grew up in the US, I'm a US citizen. So I have those advantages already, right? And the parents who made huge sacrifices in various ways, you know, nobody's perfect, right? And as parents, we know that we are not perfect. But you know, my parents made huge sacrifices.
Don't tell my kids.
No, my kids are very aware that I'm not perfect. So you know, I've had some big advantages in life, right? Which is that, yes, I'm a woman. And so, and I do tend to dress a certain way. You know, just those are things that I like my appearance tends to be highly feminine, right? And it's always weird to talk about yourself this way, but like I think that I would be considered conventionally attractive, right? So these are things that already remove layers of difficulty that other people may have, right? Where they are being judged on aspects of their appearance that I may not have somebody judging me by, where they have their capability questioned in a way that I don't. So I do get comments about, like, are you sure you're in the right place, right? These things that are very much gendered, even if not explicitly so. I think, you know, anybody who's being intellectually honest with themselves knows these are things that are gendered, you know. But as an East Asian woman in tech, I am assumed to be competent. Right. And that is a huge difference between things that other women, and especially Black and Latino women, experience in technology specifically, which is that I am assumed to be competent. I am assumed to know what I'm doing. I may be assumed to be a designer sometimes because of my appearances. I may be assumed to be more of a manager type because I'm a woman. You know, who knows? Those things do come into play. But by and large, I'm assumed to be good at what I do. Right. And so people are like, okay, why can't you just accept that? Why can't you just go with it? It's benefiting you. What's the problem? And the thing is, you know, equity matters, right? And so knowing that I am assumed to be competent, right, means that maybe it would be nice if we said everybody is assumed to be competent, but we live in the real world, and it takes 5 seconds to find out that not everybody is assumed to be competent. Right. And so long as that's the case, it is not right for me to have an advantage over somebody else simply because I look a certain way, because I happen to be born a certain way. Right. And so that really bothers me, is that I'm being seen as good. And on top of that, the history relations between East Asian people and the Black community specifically in the US is very much one of where we are used as ammunition against this other group, where they say, look at these immigrants, look at these people, they came here and they succeeded, right? They make more money than white people do on aggregate.
Why can't you do it?
Right. Why can't you do it? What is wrong with you? You must have something wrong with you. And it's like, listen, there's so many things wrong here. First, you have to disaggregate Asians, even East Asians. They're too major waves of Asian immigration, Chinese immigration specifically, right? So like, I'll be really specific because I'm a Chinese person, and so I'm not going to speak for somebody else, right? In the Chinese community, Chinese American community, you have immigrants who have come to the US over hundreds of years, right? Who came as laborers, who were brought in as indentured servants, right? And actually were some of the first people to unionize in the railroads, right? And that sort of thing. So there's a long history on the West Coast of the US. On the East Coast, we have a different history, and broadly, which is that in the 70s, you started having some people from Taiwan specifically start coming to the US as academics in school and for teaching. And then in the 80s, people from mainland China, which include my parents, right? And so our conditions, even though I grew up economically insecure, that's not the same as somebody whose parents came in when Chinese people were banned, which was between the 1880s and the 1940s, which people don't know, where we were disallowed from immigrating to the US, right? And so you have people who were brought to the US under, you know, difficult circumstances, whose only, the only opportunities available to them were working in restaurants, working in the laundry, right? These things that were stereotyped as in the US, because those were very real. Those are the only opportunities given to us. And so, or to them, right? It's hard because that's not my family, but that is the legacy of Chinese people in the US. And so comparing those things and aggregating them all together and claiming that just because this one wave of immigrants came in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and them and their children have been relatively successful from a money standpoint does not mean that we've done something better with our lives than this other group of people who were brought here as slaves and were never given an opportunity to come out of it, right? And so, and still are not, right? So the modern US is still very much based on slavery, right? Like, who's fighting your fires in California? If you don't know, you should go find out, right? So we have these systems and they're not the same. And so when they do these very dishonest things, like saying the Asians have done well, that must mean that they're like superior, right? This is wrong. And that makes me angry. It doesn't matter that it's benefiting me on a personal level. It just makes me angry because it's not equitable. It is not correct. And having grown up to, so my father, it's actually very politically conservative, which is weird. But my father has actually taught in historically Black colleges and universities for 25 years. And so I grew up around a lot of Black people. And they, to me, that's just their people, which is what everybody should see them as, right? But this is very much a part of my daily life. And so to see these people who I grew up with, who have, you know, consistently been kind, generous, friendly, at the forefront of culture, which nobody can deny in the US, you know, to see them demonized, right, is just like, it's infuriating. And so in tech, you get the same thing where you have these people who have worked so hard to get to where they are, and yet they're assumed to be incompetent just because they're not white or East Asian, you know, and I can't stand it. It makes me angry.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned what you did now, because it kind of ties into this whole concept of meritocracy. You know, everybody is equal, the best will rise, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of get into that whole conversation about, and well, no, because, you know, I you know, with South Africa, I'm sure you know some of the history of apartheid and all those kind of things.
Yes.
And, you know, I see these conversations where people are saying, oh, well, you know, I didn't have a great upbringing and I was able to make something with my life. And I'm like, yes, that's because you're white. Yeah. And that means in this country, you grew up in a house and you got to go to a school. And even if you didn't have money to, you know, invest in college, you got a high school diploma, degree, whatever it is in this country, which a whole bunch of people were flat out denied. So don't tell me it's all equal. So I'm going to pose a question to you that is not aimed at you. It's actually aimed at the people listening to this, but I'm going to ask you to give your opinion. And this is Helen's opinion. This is not Director of Open Source Initiatives at 10UP's opinion. This is not Lead Developer of WordPress's opinion. This is Helen as a human being. What can we or should we be doing in our tech communities to prevent this kind of, oh, it's all just about merit will rise and everybody's equal nonsense?
Yeah. So I think, so to preface this, I think something in technology, and especially for people who identify as like developers, right, in the community space, is that we, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that we tend to focus on solutioning, right? Solutioning, solutioneering, you know, whatever cutesy term you want to use for it. We tend to focus on this idea that things can be solved. And I think that this is incorrect for a lot of human things, right? Racism cannot be solved by you doing something, right? You can question yourself. You can be mm-hmm. aware of yourself, but to you cannot solve the system, right? The system right. has to be removed and started over is the truth of that, right? So when we talk about, when people are like, oh, you're so extreme, you want to like abolish the police. And it's like, well, it's, you know, the roots are rotten. So you got to start somewhere right. else is what I think, right? So, so again, personal opinion, I don't know. But in terms of merit, and I will use myself as an example of this. So one of the reasons why I did so poorly through grade school specifically is that I did not believe in doing work when I already understood what was going on, right? So homework, right? Homework can be fine because sometimes you need to drill a thing or you need to learn a thing. But if I felt like, you know, again, this is bratty. This is also bratty teenagers. Like, this is not, I'm not calling myself like some amazing, you know, person who just, you know, was like better than everybody else because I had this perspective. I was being I don't want to say bad words. I was being a bratty teenager. and so I was being, you know, a teen. But also I just, to me, it was very much this like, who has set these rules? Why do I have to abide by these rules? Who am I proving something to? Why do I have to prove this thing? Why do I have to prove I've done this work to somebody? Either I know the thing or I don't, right? Either I can execute the thing or I can't. So why do I need to jump through these hoops of, okay, great, I did my worksheet for the day. Who cares, right? Whose definition of merit are we talking about? And that to me is the one thing that I think that I did get right growing up. Maybe the execution of it was wrong. Maybe the merit is in understanding that a system exists and, you know, you do what you need to do within that system sometimes, right? But in terms of what is merit, why do we keep talking about meritocracy? The very first thing that we have to do is we have to stop and we have to say, who has decided what merit means, right? Whose definition of merit are we chasing? If this idea of meritocracy is still based in the history of white men deciding what their values are, and therefore everybody has to meet those values in order to have merit in society, in work, in whatever, that is a racist system. Sorry, right? You don't like to hear it because they didn't do it out of racism. Sure, they probably didn't. Sometimes they did. I think it's pretty explicit that sometimes they did.
Probably mostly they did.
But even if in modern times it's not explicitly that you're making racist decisions, the foundation, again, the foundation itself is rooted in something that is racist in that it is only benefiting one group, right? It is not equitable, right? So you have to stop and think, okay, who has defined what merit is? Do we as a community agree that our values actually align with this definition of merit, right? So in WordPress, this has come up many times, where somebody will say, I thought this was a meritocracy. And somebody will say, well, you know what? Our definition of merit includes the way that you communicate with other people.
Right.
Right? You have come in here saying, this is a meritocracy, this is a meritocracy. And this gets into why I don't love terminology. What does meritocracy mean to you? To this person who's trying to use it as a wedge, to them, the meritocracy definition is, my code works, therefore it has merit. I, as a human, do not need to be judged. Only my code needs to be judged. This is not true anywhere in society. We live in a society, right? This is the ongoing, we live in a society. What are you doing? But that's reality, right? Part of your merit is, how do you communicate those changes? Are you thoughtful in the way that you talk to other people about it? How have you presented these things, right? There are lots of components of merit. And in open source, as a public project, the way you communicate, the way that you include other people, right? So one of the problems that we have is like, how do you declare what your values are as a project, right? I can say what my values are. My values are for things to be equitable, for us to see other people who are different as being valuable in their differences, right? Not in that like you have to tolerate everything. There are lots of things that are not acceptable. Right. And we can get into this like, oh, you know, how can you define all these things ever? And it's like, well, we're people, things change as you go. Sorry. You know, sorry that you want a clear definition and there isn't one. But what is this definition of merit? And who meets it? And so you get into these things where if we look at like the broader workspace, right? So not about WordPress specifically, but in the broader workplace, we have things like dress codes, hairstyles, the way that people talk, right? When I talk about code switching, you know, there's like the way that you talk professionally. But who has defined these things, right? Mm. What is professionalism? Who decided what professionalism is, right? So why do we think of women as needing to have long, you know, straightened or perfectly curled hair? Mm. That's not natural, right? Mm. Why are braids on Black women considered to be unprofessional? They're not. They've spent hours and an unholy amount of money, I want to add, on taking care of their hair. They have taken care of their hair. And just because your, racist definition of what professionalism is includes a certain hairstyle for women, racist and sexist, doesn't mean that this thing that they've done is unprofessional. And so you really have to take a step back and say, who decided these things? Right? Mm. Are they truly correct? Or do they have their base in racism, classism, which in the US are very much tied together, right? And so when you want people to speak a certain way, where does that come from? The consideration that like, oh, you know, Black people, they talk, you know, they speak English wrong. And it's like, no, they speak a different dialect of English. Mm. That doesn't make them wrong. And they don't do it in front of you. You know, like, sorry, you can't grow up Black in America and not have learned when to put on a different voice for somebody else because, you know, majority culture, you don't get to exist and not know what majority culture expects of you, you know? And so, sorry, they've mastered more idioms than you have. Sorry that you feel bad about that, you know? And so that's really where I come from is this idea of like, I'm skeptical of the system to begin with. Sometimes, and especially for Chinese people culturally, we're taught to work within the system to make the system work for us, right? Because sometimes you do need to just get ahead. Sometimes you do need to think of yourself and you need to put yourself in a position where now I have amassed enough power and enough influence to be able to sit down and say this and not be afraid of getting fired, not be afraid of some of these things that other people correctly are still worried about, right? So I have to use my positioning to speak out because I have done my time and I have worked through a system and I have had advantages and taken those advantages to get to where I am, right? And so now it's on me to stand up and say, okay, the system that put me here is not equitable. It's okay for me to say that. That doesn't mean that what I've done is not valuable. It doesn't mean that I have not worked hard, right? It is not personal. I can have gotten here and still recognize that the system that put me here is not equitable. Here we are. And that's what I want. I want people to take a step back. When you're looking at somebody and your initial reaction is, and we have these things, right? We're all socialized. Mm. We can't pretend that we're not, right? So if you meet somebody or you see somebody talking and your first reaction is, oh, I hate this, right? The correct thing to do is not try to fix them. The correct thing to do is for you to take a step back and think to yourself, why do I have such a negative reaction to this? It's okay to have that negative reaction, right? That's the context that I think people like to dishonestly remove. It's like, you're bad for having that reaction. You are not. We're all normal. Mm. We're socialized. We have these things. We have reactions, right? What's important is, are you honest enough with yourself to be able to see that you're reacting poorly to somebody, to take a step back and think to yourself, is it good? Is that correct, right? Sometimes those bad reactions are good instincts, right? It's just that you need to be self-aware enough to think through it before you do anything with that, right? And so if for instance, I see somebody on a train. So this is a real example. So I was on a train in New York late at night, and a young Black man walked into the train, and I immediately was like, oh God. And my first thought was, am I being racist because I was raised in that way? Right? And so I observed him and was like, okay, there are behaviors that he has that are not related to what he looks like, right? His behaviors are bad. And so, okay, I am relieved selfishly that I did not have a racist reaction to this person. And that I did notice this person for what are good instincts, which is that his behavior is very bad. Mm-hmm. And it did turn out that he was trying to molest somebody on the train, and I caught him.
Oh, wow.
Removed the woman from the situation because I was observant, right? And so instead of and so you sometimes also see this in like people who are trying too hard to course correct, right? Where they'll just be like, oh, I was being racist. I'm just gonna I don't wanna see color. I don't wanna see that, right? And it's like, no, you can't ignore those things. It's not that you can ignore it. It's not that you can throw it away. It's that you have to question yourself and make sure that what you're doing is honest and good, right? Before moving on. So that's really, that's what it is I want us to question what we're doing, right? I don't want to say X thing is wrong, X thing is bad. The thing that is bad is that we have wholesale accepted this idea of professionalism or merit without questioning where it comes from, right?
I think that that self-awareness is key. I think we don't realize that a lot of the way we think and the way we see the world and the things that we do are based on what we were taught and what we were exposed to growing up and work and jobs and whatever else. And being able to actually sit down and actually go, okay, well, why do I think this way? And does the way I think today, is that my own decision? Or is that based on something that I've been taught that maybe I don't agree with? And that self-awareness is key. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine. We were talking about color. He's from a community in South Africa that are called coloreds. And I don't mean any disrespect from that community, but that's the term that is sort of traditionally used. And we got into this conversation about, you know, people who say, oh, I don't see color. And he introduced me to the concept of, well, that's absolute rubbish, because if you're saying to me you don't see color, that means you are disrespecting my entire heritage.
Yes.
And that really opened up my eyes to sort of that way of thinking. And I think sometimes I tend to, because I'm white and because I'm a male, I tend to sometimes over course correct. And so I've learned I found by having these kinds of conversations and conversations with other people of all kinds of different backgrounds, it kind of helps me to understand, you know, the histories and the what's going on. So what you were saying is so true, that self-awareness of, you know, who am I as a human being and how do I see things, and do those things align with the way the world is, or is this what I've been taught and do I need to go further, is very, very interesting. We could, again, talk about this, you know, for hours and hours and hours, but we're starting to get close to time now. I have a whole bunch of questions that I normally would ask. I'm glad we didn't ask any of them. There is one question that I would like to ask you to kind of round this up. And again, this is you as Helen, as a human being, not as lead developer, not as 10UP. So this is your opinion. Is there one aspect of WordPress that if you, the community or the software or any part of it, if you could just snap your fingers and change it, what is that and why?
Oh gosh, I have two separate answers to this, I guess. I have like the broad answer, which is that I would like people to think more creatively about their solutions, right? I think that a tendency in the WordPress space is that, you know, we have to get stuff done. We have a lot of work, and that's great. As a community, right? We have a lot of work, but we tend to then just fall back to safety. And so we're just always implementing stuff the same way. We build out the same meta boxes. We maybe now have started to adopt some blocks, but we build them all the same way, right? So some of that's, again, it's a function of having so much work, which is good in itself. But if you observe the broader patterns of the community who has gotten sort of like positive attention and made positive moves and has had influence, are the people who are thinking outside of the box and people who are thinking of, if I were using this thing, what would make it easier for me as a user, right? And to be able to take a step back and use the software as a user, right? Like I need to get back to this actually. I occasionally will stream myself on Twitch working on something, and I'm just using WordPress as a user, and I mess stuff up all the time. I get lost. I forget where things are, you know, and that's reality. And so when that happens, it's not I did something bad as a user. It's that my thought process has to be, what can I do better to get them to where they need to go? How do I provide my user the safety, the confidence to accomplish their thing, right? So for me, a specific example, because I know people like to have like a specific thing to think about, a specific example of this for me would be to take that starter content stuff and apply it to the theme directory, right? Hmm. So you get a theme and the preview on WordPress.org does not suck, because they suck. Hmm. I don't know if they've changed recently, because I will readily admit it has been a while since I've browsed theme previews on WordPress.org. However, historically, they have not been good, because they all just use the same test data, and there are lots of themes that are not chronological blog, you know, post entry oriented, right? And they have certain types of content that are going to make them look better. And that's what users are really thinking of. They're thinking, I have this specific thing that I want to accomplish. They're not thinking, I'm going to take the 2020 theme and turn it into my coffee shop website. They're thinking, I want a coffee shop website, right? Yeah. So it's this idea that, and we're getting there with blocks, and we're all driving toward the same place, right? From the core project perspective, you know, for all the worries that people have about like where it's going, it's this idea that you should be able to think, I want to build a site to do X, and you can do it, right? Right now, what you have to do is you have to think, I want to use WordPress and make it do the thing, right? That's incorrect. That is the incorrect approach. That is our approach as developers. Fine, whatever. But from the other user perspective, the users that we prioritize as a project, there has never been any doubt about this. The users that we prioritize as a project are the users saying, I want to make a site that does this, right? And we want to position WordPress to be an option for them. And honestly, it is currently not. It is not a reasonable option for you to say, hey, take this theme and like these 25 plugins and put XYZ in the widget area, and then maybe it'll look like the thing that you're expecting it to look like. No, we need to have collections of blocks that are geared toward a specific use case, so that this person can spin up their site and say, I understand that I should put my hours here. I understand I should put my address here. I understand a Mac would look awesome here. I understand, you know, if I install this plugin, I'll get my Instagram feed over here, right? And hopefully you can just install it right in the block editor, right? So this is where we're trying to go. And that is the broad project perspective. But the small thing that I feel like we could do right now is take advantage of starter content on the .org theme directory previews.
Excellent. Well, you heard it here first, folks. If you're looking for something to contribute to, lead developer of WordPress.
5 years is Helen suddenly going to get done.
Mentioned it here. Let's get it done. No, and I'm joking, obviously, because it's not. I know it's not just a case of let's get it done. I mean, I was recently trying to get a ticket that was 5 years old at the time, which eventually got done in the last release. I was super happy about that happening. But yeah, you know, it's the nature of open source. Well, Helen, it was amazing to finally get a chance to speak to you face to face. I have been trying to get hold of you for so many years, but obviously with your pregnancy and everything else, it's great to finally chat to you. I do hope I can convince you to come on again at a later stage, and we can do a part two of this, because there's so many other things I'd love to chat to you about. But I'll give you a break from me harassing you about it. If people want, and this is entirely up to you if you want to share this, but if people want to find you online, where's the best place to get hold of you?
It's fine. This is a real me. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Helen Ho Sandy on Twitter, just all one string. All together. Fair warning that I do tweet kind of wild sometimes. I don't think that I tweet anything all that controversial, which I actually face relatively little harassment. And I think some of it's just that like, I do keep a lot of stuff to myself despite appearances. Right. There are different aspects of a person that they put online. And so you can follow me on Twitter. You'll see a lot of different things and probably not a whole lot of WordPress, although maybe more coming up. I'm in the WordPress.org Slack. I'm just Helen in most WordPress spaces. Also GitHub, I'm just Helen. So you can also find me in those technical spaces if that's what you're looking for. So
Excellent. Well, thank you again very much for joining me this morning, your time. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of your week. I look forward to the next release coming out, of which you're a part. For those of you who don't know, it's an all-woman release squad, which is super exciting. And I look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Yeah, sounds great.
Great. Thank you.
Bye.